Okay, well, in the UK, when there's an accident involving an aircraft, there's an organisation called the Air Accidents Investigation Branch. They used to have a big kind of aircraft hangar near where I used to work, and whenever there was a crash, they used to lay out the parts of the aircraft that they could find and go through it, examine every part and try and work out why the crash had happened. And the reason for doing that was not to kind of try and put blame on anyone or anything like that, but to find out why it had happened so that they could prevent it happening again, so that a tragedy that occurred wasn't repeated if it could possibly be saved. I imagine that was often quite an unpleasant job, quite a difficult thing to do, and yet worth doing to try and prevent tragedy happening again. Well, this morning, we're going to be doing something like that. We're going to be sifting through the wreckage of a crash in Solomon's life. And we're going to be doing that so that we can try and prevent the same kind of thing happening again, so that we can try and prevent another tragedy. And make no mistake about it, this chapter is a tragedy. It's a tragedy. We've seen, haven't we, over the last 10 chapters or so of Solomon's life, that he's been a glorious king, great heights of glory and splendor. He built this incredible kingdom. He secured the kingdom against enemies. God has blessed him by visiting him twice. He's given him extraordinary wisdom. And Solomon used his wisdom to bring justice and prosperity to his people. There was great wealth, great riches. We've seen, haven't we, that the Lord come down and dwell in the temple that Solomon built. And as Solomon's wealth and his wisdom grow, we've seen him be a blessing, not just to his own nation, but to all the nations. The whole world is flooding in, not just to praise Solomon, but to praise God, to praise the true God. He is the most glorious king that has ever lived. That's what we've seen so far about Solomon. But then suddenly, chapter 11 kind of hits us with a dull thud, doesn't it? It all comes crashing down. All of his brilliance, his splendor, comes to an end in a few verses. His reign ends in tragedy and in disaster. I'm afraid this is one of the parts of the Bible that makes you miserable when you read it. It's not a kind of Hollywood story. There's no happy ending in Solomon's life. It's depressing. It's ugly. It's just so senseless. You feel like you need to kind of curl up in a corner and have a good cry by the time you've got to the end of reading it. But this chapter is given to us by God's grace. It's given to us so that we can see the tragedy of Solomon's life and we can avoid that kind of tragedy happening in our own lives. It's given to us so that we can learn from it. And so this morning we're going to make ourselves familiar with what Solomon did, to understand what he was doing and why he did it. And then we'll spend some time seeing what we can learn from it and how we can avoid those same kinds of things ourselves. So first of all, what did Solomon do? What was the problem? What did he do? Well, first of all, verse 1, Solomon married many women. He loved many foreign women. If you look at verse 3, you can see quite how many women it was. 700 wives and 300 concubines, kind of live-in mistresses. I think that probably qualifies as many wives, don't you? The problem with that was that in Deuteronomy, kings were specifically forbidden to marry many wives. So Solomon has disobeyed God here. So a clear breach of God's commands to him. But it wasn't just that Solomon married many wives, it was also that they were foreign wives. They came from tribes that were living in the land of Canaan when the Israelites moved in and conquered it. These were all the nations that were there, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites. Those were the tribes that lived there, and Solomon has married women from those tribes. And again, people were specifically forbidden, all people, not just kings, from marrying into those tribes. You can see that in verse 2. That's what God had told people there before they went into the promised land. He said, you must not intermarry with them. because they will surely turn their hearts after their gods. See, the problem with marrying these foreign women is not that they're foreign. The Bible has no problem with mixed race or mixed nationality marriages. The problem was that they were pagan, that they followed other religions, they worshipped other gods. And so if the Israelites intermarried with them, there would be a great risk that they would be led into worshipping those other gods, the idols of their wives. And in fact, that's exactly what happened in Solomon's case. Have a look there at verse 4. As Solomon grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not fully devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. Now, when we looked at Solomon's life so far, we've seen that one of the features of his life is an extensive building program, isn't it? He built a great palace for himself. He fortified cities and set up these kind of big cities on trade routes to bring prosperity to the country. And, of course, the crowning achievement of Solomon's life was building the temple for God in Jerusalem. But if you look at verse 7, you can see that now, at the end of his life, Solomon starts another building program. He begins to build more temples. Temples for the detestable god Chemosh and Molech. Molech was worshipped with child sacrifices. The hill on the hill to the east of Jerusalem, that it says there in verse 7, is the Mount of Olives. So in the city, you'd have on one hill in the centre of Jerusalem the temple to the true God, and just across the valley on another hill you'd have a whole set of idol temples that Solomon had built. And Solomon wasn't just doing this for the sake of his wives. He wasn't just giving them a temple to keep them happy. He was actually following the gods himself. You can see that in verse 5 and in a few other places as well. It says there, he followed Ashtoreth and Molech. As he got to the end of his life, Solomon turned away from the Lord, the God of Israel, and followed other gods. That's what he did. That was what was so serious. So why did he do that? Why did he do it? Perhaps we feel more like asking, how could he do it? How could someone like Solomon do something as terrible, as serious as this? How could someone so wise be such a fool? Solomon had so many privileges, didn't he? He had received so much from God. Verse 9 tells us that God had appeared to him twice. Now that's something that happens to almost nobody else in the whole of the Old Testament. He was in a more privileged position than almost anybody else who has ever lived. How could he go off and worship other gods rather than the God who had actually appeared to him? What was the problem? Well, it's worth noticing, I think, what the problem is not, first of all. The problem was not his wealth. We hear, don't we, so much in these first 10 chapters about Solomon's gold, about his splendor, about his luxury throne, about all the luxury goods that he imports. We can almost automatically think that that's the problem, can't we? That's what's gone wrong here. Solomon has had a bit too much stuff. He's got a bit too rich, a bit too quickly. And that he's gone off after those things. And of course, there's no doubt that for some people, having wealth does turn them away from God. But that's not Solomon's problem. If we were to walk into Solomon's palace, we'd look around, wouldn't we, and see all the splendor, see the lavish furnishings, all the luxury things that he had around, and all the gold. We might think, mightn't we, here's a man whose heart is not set on God. And we'd be right, but it wouldn't be that luxury. It wouldn't be the gold that was the cause of that. It's something much more subtle, in fact, than that. It's because of what Solomon loves. It's because of what he loves. Verse 1 tells us, Solomon loved many foreign women. And we see it again in verse 2. Solomon held fast to them in love. All the way through these verses, there's a word that's repeated. The word heart comes over and over again. Verse 2, they will turn away your heart. Verse 3, his wives turned his heart. Verse 4, his wives turned his heart. His heart was not devoted to the Lord as the heart of David had been. We see it in verse 9 as well. And when we talk about someone's heart, we're usually talking about their emotions or their feelings. But the Bible talks about much more than that when it talks about heart. It also includes what we call our brain, our thinking centre. The heart is our kind of control centre. It's the loving, thinking, willing, choosing core of us. The problem here was with Solomon's heart, that he loved many foreign women. And they turned his heart, his will, his desires away from God. I don't know if you remember, but right back in chapter 3, we're told there that Solomon loved the Lord. He's the only person in the Old Testament of whom it's said directly that he loved the Lord. But what a change we see, don't we, as we come here. By the end of his life, he loved many foreign women. What a change. That explains why somebody as wise as Solomon could end up being so foolish. When he loved God, then he used his wisdom to honour God, to do what was good and right and just. But now his heart has turned away from God. And no amount of God's gifts are going to keep him from sin. He uses his wisdom now for what his heart loves, what his heart desires. He's lost his heart for God. And so he plunges into sin. And what's the result of what Solomon does? Well, look at verse 9. The Lord became angry with Solomon. The Lord became angry. God is angry when people sin against him. He doesn't just overlook it. He doesn't think, oh well, bit of a mistake there, bit of a slip up. The Lord is angry. He doesn't turn a blind eye. And in his anger, he acts. Look at verse 11. Because Solomon has not kept God's commands, God is going to tear the kingdom away from Solomon, and he's going to give it to someone else, to one of his servants. Solomon is going to lose the kingdom. It was a glorious kingdom, wasn't it? It was a kingdom through which the whole world was being blessed. All the nations, we saw last week, were coming in to praise and to worship God. But God is prepared to rip that kingdom out of Solomon's hands, to tear it apart because of Solomon's idolatry. That's exactly what God had promised Solomon would happen if he wasn't faithful. If he didn't continue to walk in obedience, then there would be terrible consequences. The people would see the tatters of the kingdom and they would mock. They would wonder what these people had done to upset God. And God is faithful. He does what he says. He's faithful to his word of judgment. He will tear the kingdom away from Solomon as he promised. And that's why in the rest of chapter 11, we read about these three men who God raised up to rebel against Solomon. So verse 14, the Lord raised up against Solomon an adversary, Hadad the Edomite. We need to notice that the Lord raised him up. He didn't just pop up out of nowhere. He didn't decide he was going to have a pop at the kingdom one day. God raised him up. God did it. It was God's act of judgment. See, God's anger burns against sinful idolatry. He won't tolerate it. It must be dealt with. Whatever the cost, God will deal with it. But as well as God's judgment, we also see God's mercy. His mercy shines through here. Verses 12 and 13, we see that God's judgment is not total. It's not complete. For the sake of David, whose heart always followed God, God is going to delay his judgment on Solomon. He's not going to do it immediately. He's going to tear the kingdom away instead from Solomon's son. And he is not going to completely cut off his people forever. He is going to leave one tribe. With Solomon's son, with Solomon's line. God holds back his judgment and he softens it with mercy. But there is great judgment coming because of what Solomon has done. And so that's the sad story of Solomon, the great king who turned from God to idols and lost the most glorious kingdom that the world has ever known. It's a tragedy, isn't it? It is a tragic story. So what can we learn? What can we learn from Solomon? It's good to learn from your mistakes, isn't it? That's something that we need to do in life. But it's even better to learn from someone else's mistakes. That's the ideal, isn't it? Then they can make all the mistakes and you don't have to make them yourself. And one of the great things about the Bible is that it presents people with all their sins and mistakes intact on view for us, so that we can learn from them, so that we don't do the same thing ourselves. And so we're going to look at four lessons that we can learn from Solomon this morning. Four things that we need to see that will help us to avoid this same kind of tragedy in our lives. So first of all, the first thing to notice is that a downfall like Solomon's is the result of lots of little compromises with sin. It's the result of lots of little compromises with sin. Now, the way that Solomon's downfall is described here in 1 Kings, it appears that it comes very suddenly, doesn't it? We've had 10 good chapters, and then suddenly in a few verses, in fact almost just in one verse, it all comes crashing down. But in reality, it didn't happen overnight. It was the result of a lifetime of compromising with sin. All the way along through Solomon's life, there were these little compromises, things that we hardly notice over at the time. We're prepared to kind of overlook them. They look so small, they look insignificant, but little by little, they're leading him in the wrong direction. The warning signs are there all along. You may have kind of noticed some over the last few weeks as we've been looking at Solomon. We're told that when Solomon became king, he continued to burn incense and to make sacrifices on the old Canaanite high places. I think he was making his offerings to God, but it displeased God because they'd been told not to use those high places. He should have destroyed them. He should have cut himself off completely from idolatry, but he doesn't do that to start with. Solomon marries Pharaoh's daughter. He wasn't exactly forbidden to do that, if you kind of follow the actual letter of the law, but it was certainly extremely unwise. It was given his previous history with Egypt, it seems to be quite a foolish thing to do, alliancing himself with Egypt. In chapter 9, Solomon gives away part of the promised land to Hiram, gives away some towns. That raises a few questions in our minds, doesn't it? In chapter 10, he accumulates wealth and horses, chariots. Those were things that kings were forbidden to do. And at the end of chapter 10, he seems to be sending people back to Egypt to get more horses, which God had warned the people again not to do. And of course, you don't marry 1,000 wives overnight, do you? Solomon must have been disobeying God by marrying pagan women for years. All these things were undermining Solomon's spiritual life, his walk with God. Time after time, he compromised in little things, things that hardly seem mentioning, perhaps. But the end result is that when he grew old, his wives turned his heart after other gods. It's a bit like that game Jenga. Have you played that? Where you have a tower of blocks, and you have to take it in turns to pull blocks out from the bottom and to put them on the top until eventually the whole tower comes collapsing down. With each compromise, each sinful decision that Solomon made, he was pulling blocks out of the structure of his walk with God until eventually the whole thing comes crashing down. And the same thing can apply to us, can't it? Great falls in the Christian life are almost never the result of just one moment of madness. They come through 1,000 small compromises with holiness. Little things done over years. Until in the end, the whole lot comes crashing down. Maybe we just make a few small compromises here and there, things that we can easily justify. We say, I can't be generous with my money because I never know whether I'm going to need it soon. Or maybe that film had a few dodgy scenes in, but it's hardly pornographic. It was only a 15 after all. We say, I know I shouldn't go out with someone who's not a Christian, but he's a nice person. And there aren't any decent Christian men out there anyway. Just little things, things that hardly seem wrong, things we can easily justify to ourselves. But they set our lives off in the wrong direction. And before we know it, we can be well off track and heading for disaster. Secondly, Solomon's Fool warns us not to get complacent. Don't get complacent. None of us should think it could never happen to me. Solomon enjoyed great gifts, didn't he, and great privileges from God. He had godly parents. King David was his father, one of the most godly men who'd ever lived, a man after God's own heart. Solomon had great experiences of God. God had met with him twice. He'd received great blessings from God, and he had great gifts from God. He had greater wisdom than anyone else. Solomon had a global ministry, didn't he? He led thousands in worship. He wrote part of the Bible. His prayer is one of the great prayers of the Bible. Because of Solomon, people were flooding in to worship God from all over the world. He's a kind of one-man missionary revival, isn't he? He had great gifts. He was doing great things for God. But despite all of that, Solomon wandered away from God and did evil. And so we need to be warned, don't we? We need to not think that it could never happen to us. Maybe we think God is blessing what I'm doing. I'm using my gifts to serve him. I'm doing great things for God. I'm useful. God would never let disaster come to me. But if it happened to Solomon, it can happen to us, can't it? We can't assume that our knowledge or our gifts or our service of God will protect us. That it could never happen to us. If our hearts turn away from God, then no amount of giftedness will save us. And this applies whatever stage of life we're in. Notice that in verse 4, it was as Solomon grew old that his heart was turned after other gods. We shouldn't think, should we, that if we've reached a certain age, then we can relax, then we can coast a lot. In our culture, there's a great focus on the young, aren't there? The young people. But actually, this should alert us, shouldn't it, to the fact that this can happen at any stage of life. To those who are older. A few months ago, a man called John Chapman died. He was an Australian evangelist. I think he was 84. One of the things that he said was, the first 84 years are the hardest. That was his experience of the Christian life. We don't retire, do we, from the Christian life? We don't retire from the need to be vigilant. We don't retire from keeping on, fighting sin. Don't get complacent if you're older. The battle goes on. And if you're young, now is the time to put good habits in place that will serve you for a lifetime. If you know that there are things in your life now that need sorting out, then sort them out now. It won't get any easier. And Solomon shows us that those things can catch up with us eventually and can lead to disaster. It's as Solomon grew old that his heart was turned after other gods. And the sad fact is that Solomon, after all his greatness and wisdom, left the kingdom in a worse state than when he became king. He started off as king by securing the kingdom against various enemies that were lined up against it. But now, because of Solomon's sin, God himself has raised up people to rebel and to tear the kingdom away from David's line. That's guaranteed. We know that's going to happen. Because of what Solomon has done, the kingdom will be gone. Solomon undoes all the good work that David has done in uniting the tribes together into one nation, into one people. They're going to be separated. 10 of them will go off and follow a different king. Now, Solomon's career begins by building the temple to worship God, and if he finishes his career by building temples to all kinds of pagan gods. He sets the nation on a course from which it will never recover. It is all downhill from here until it's gone. And so, don't be like Solomon. Don't be like Solomon. It would be tragic, wouldn't it, for us to come to the end of our lives and have an epitaph like Solomon's in verse 6. It says there, doesn't it, Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. He did not follow the Lord completely, as David his father had done. What a terrible thing to say at the end of somebody's life. Don't get complacent. Don't let that be said of you. And so thirdly, what do we need to do to avoid being like Solomon? What do we need to do to avoid this happening to us? Well, we need to guard our hearts, don't we? That's what's at the root of Solomon's problem. It's a problem of his heart. His heart turned away from God because he loved many foreign women. And so we need to ask ourselves, are there things which I love, which I won't give up, even though I know that holding on to them is flirting with tragedy? Are there things in my life that are leading me away from God and not towards him? Things that are weakening, perhaps even in small ways, my relationship with the Lord? What is it that my heart holds fast to that is compromising my walk with God? These things, we need to grow in our love for Jesus, don't we? Rather than being satisfied with the shabby pleasures of idols, we need to feast on the glories of Jesus. We need to fill our hearts and our minds with him. That's the thing that puts all our second-rate pleasures in their place, isn't it? They're driven out by our love for something, for Jesus.